Mike, I know you want to talk about the closing of a Mason institution. You want to tell us a little bit about Darb's Tavern?
Yeah, no, I mean, yeah, been there a long time. You know, I've always been more of a courthouse pub kind of guy and a Bobby G's kind of guy, if you want to go back into those days. But that's 20, 30 years ago. But, yeah, I mean, Mason's got a great downtown area. I just kind of wonder if that location, being away from the downtown, you might have caught up to Darb's a little bit. But certainly is a very popular, friendly local spot. A lot of Mason folks are keenly aware of it. And, you hate to see any small business go down, but it's been tough for small businesses, especially in the state of Michigan with the government there and the way some things have gone down and COVID restrictions. So tough times in mid-Michigan. You hope for everyone, everyone can move forward in a positive fashion. Like I said, real hard for small businesses right now in that business climate.
All right. We've got your political advertisement in there. I want to talk about the Georgia Bulldogs. This team does not have the defensive roster of first-round picks that last year's did, but might be better on offense. Is this team going to win another national title?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I kind of say, where's the threat? I mean, it's really hard to say. The playoffs kind of open it up a little bit to who gets hot at the end of the year.
You
kind of have to see how these teams come out of their league championship games. I understand Michigan is going to have the player playing that has the pending criminal charge, right?
Yeah, Mozzie Smith. Yeah.
Yep.
Excellent defensive
line. Jim Harbaugh is morality ideals only apply to other schools, apparently. That'll help. He's a great player and good for Michigan that he'll be available for Purdue. And certainly that helps their football team. They look good this year. I know Blake Corum's recently undergone season-ending surgery. It's unfortunate. I like the mobility at quarterback. I think this is a better version of Michigan football than we saw last year.
Yeah.
And I don't think this version of Georgia football is as talented, certainly not as proven, with 15 guys gone to the NFL. So you wonder if Michigan's that team, how will they do in the playoff? Should they get paired with USC or TCU? I think either one of those teams are certainly beatable, Jack.
When you look at the college football playoff rankings, Mike, and there's only one ranking to go, the one that really matters Sunday at noon, you have Georgia 1, Michigan 2, TCU unbeaten at 3, USC 4, Ohio State 5, and Alabama 6. Do they have those six teams in the right order?
Well, that's kind of a loaded question. That's something that the committee's debated. I mean, I think you go a lot of different directions.
But you rank those teams in the Super 16, and if you were on the committee, there's always one media representative. If you were in Kelly Whiteside's seat and you were voting, would you vote them in that order, 1 through 6?
I don't know. The Ohio State question's tough for me because we kind of go back and forth between, best and deserved.
Right.
So with only one loss, I think Ohio State deserves to be ranked ahead of Alabama or Tennessee.
Yeah.
But if you're asking me if I think Ohio State would beat Alabama or Tennessee on a neutral field, I would tell you no.
Yeah.
So I think those teams are better. So
I would rank Alabama ahead of Ohio State, Mike, for these reasons. Okay, to me, it makes a difference if you lose two games on the road in very hostile environments on the last play, as opposed to you losing at home by 22 in the last game of the season, a game you've been preparing for 365 days, and it wasn't the only time this year when we've shaken our heads at Ohio State, and they've been incredible some days, but they were also outgained by Penn State. They were outgained by Northwestern, Pat Fitzgerald's team. And when you think about another close shave against Maryland, could have lost that game, they were leaking oil down the stretch.
Well, if you're going to get into hypotheticals, Michigan shouldn't be undefeated and should have lost to Illinois if not for a blown call. So should we rank TCU ahead of them?
Well, TCU had so many close games, though. But you raise a good point because TCU played tough teams if not every week, certainly every other week, had six or seven games that you'd say, wow, you know, that was a pretty good win. Michigan did not, and, you know, I still look back at the non-conference schedule and say, play somebody. Alabama did. It was a close game, but Texas is a pretty good team, and there aren't a lot of teams that would have been willing to go into Austin.
Yeah, I wonder a little bit if the Big 12 might be sneaky good, really, you know? I mean, I don't think we gave it a lot of credit. I mean, I use Kansas State and Missouri as a reference point. I think a couple of weeks after Missouri got blown out by Kansas State, they were leading Georgia by 10 points in the fourth quarter. So you wonder. It's hard to say. You know, college football, it's not the NFL. We've always celebrated that. Now it seems like we want to make it the NFL. We're expanding it to 12 teams. And, you know, I talked to one of our Greater Lansing Area Hall of Fame members about this recently, Roy Kramer, one of the all-time greats, as you know. And,
right, absolutely.
And I was honored to introduce there in downtown Lansing. And, you know, Commissioner Kramer just said, you know, this isn't really maybe the best formula to determine a national champion. You're a tournament champion now. It's different.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, the best team isn't always – it's kind of like the NCAA basketball tournament. You know, the best team doesn't always win. I mean, how many times did we see the theatrical Duke-Michigan State matchups when they really shouldn't have been meeting at that point in the tournament? Or we could go on and on about
what is the best way to determine a national champion if you're not going to do it in a tournament setting?
Well, I think the four teams was probably – you probably hit the right note, because what we want to do, or what we've always wanted to do with college football, is make sure that the regular season was the playoff.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, you hate to see teams left out that deserve to be in. But for a long time, that was because the big, you know, the Rose Bowl was so stubborn and really wouldn't partake in any sort of unified national championship until Roy Kramer created the BCS in 1998. And thank goodness the Rose Bowl yesterday decided to get on the same page as everyone else, or we would have moved on without it after, you know, 2026. But so fortunately, they're on the same page. 2024, we go to the 12-team expanded playoff. I think that sets a new standard. Jack, I'll be interested to see what happens to the bowl games now that there's a 12-team playoff, how they can maintain interest and how they can maintain player participation. You make these kids want to keep playing in games that are quote-unquote meaningless.
My understanding is, and we've seen lots of it, Mike, I think it started with Christian McCaffrey. Last year, Garrett Wilson and Chris Olave sat out for Ohio State and wound up going into top 12. This year, already indications that Michael Mayer, one of the top two tight ends in the country, you see the other one, probably not going to play in a Gator Bowl for Notre Dame. And C.J. Stroud, I doubt that we'll see him in the Rose Bowl, if that's where Ohio State ends up, or a Sugar Bowl, whatever. I think you're going to see a lot more of this. We saw it last year with Kenny Pickett of Pitt and Kenneth Walker of Michigan State. You know, one of the top quarterbacks and the top running back in the country didn't play in the Peach Bowl.
Yeah, we've seen it at Georgia when they haven't been involved in the playoff. And I thought Ohio State was angling for the Orange Bowl, was what I'd heard, that Penn State was going to the Rose Bowl. Maybe they didn't.
Yeah, I think there's something to that. I think you might be right.
Yeah, it's hard to, you know, travel across the country to see a team that lost in that fashion. And yet, that same team might be in the college football playoff if USC loses, Jack, or maybe the DCU.
Right.
I mean, I'm not ruling out the Buckeyes at all.
Yeah, yeah. I still think Alabama is, and I don't say this often, Alabama might get the short straw here. I don't know what would happen if TCU lost. I say Kansas State beat them by 10. And Utah somehow figured out a way to beat USC a second time. It's happened once. Could happen again. So your number three and number four teams lose. Could you have a Michigan-Ohio State rematch and then a Georgia-Alabama semifinal?
You know, I've never, you know, I've seen the committee. I'm going to go back to 2014 because, you know, there was some confusion / controversy after Tuesday night's playoff committee call about whether or not the field would be set after neither team played. And I said, well, now wait a minute. And I'm sure you remember 2014 along with me, Jack.
Yep.
We all thought the Spartans.
Sure do.
We're going to go to the Orange Bowl, and somehow Mississippi State jumped Michigan State in that final poll, even though neither team played.
Right.
And Michigan State ended up getting shipped to the Cotton Bowl. where they played an incredible comeback, come-from-behind win over Baylor. It was a great football game. I think they'd have beaten Georgia Tech in the Orange Bowl, too. But who? We'll never know. But the point is the College Football Playoff Committee can do whatever they want. And I don't think, though, that they would jump a two-loss Alabama over a one-loss Ohio State.
I just wonder if both those teams lost, if TCU would still get in ahead of a two-loss Alabama. Yeah. What do you think of that?
Well, I mean, you know, there's been some, you know, speculation that they would, but, you know, the thing I have a hard time with is how do you penalize a team for playing in a conference championship game when these other teams didn't make it? It's almost like, you know, they're at more risk, and that doesn't.
They want more point of risk, right?
Yeah, and I think this is something, you know, that there needs to be some foresight because, you know, one of the conditions of the expanded 12-team playoff, believe it or not, this committee is going to stay in place. They're going to keep the same protocols, and we're going to deal with the same issues moving forward, only with 12 teams. So, you know, I think they need to be careful of what sort of precedent they want to set here.
All right, last thing for you, Mike. Really appreciate your time. I know this is a crazy week with the conference championship games, and you alluded to it. I ask you this because you've covered the Big Ten. You've covered so many different schools in the SEC, and you stopped just short of using the word hypocrisy regarding what's happening in Washtenaw County and the University of Michigan situation now. Jim Harbaugh was more than willing to provide his take on what discipline should be, saying that, you know, this thing should be pursued in criminal channels. Do you think that discipline in cases like this is handled differently in conferences? We always talk about the game meaning more in the SEC, or how many schools would have done what Mel Tucker did by suspending those players without any pronouncement of guilt, basically for the end of the season. One of them, it turned out, wasn't even involved in anything in the final report.
Yeah, there was a lot of public pressure on Coach Tucker there. It was an unfortunate position that he was placed in. You know, I think that Michigan still wields a lot of power in that state and clout. Yep. And the blue wall is real. I'll tell you this. You don't see much of Tom Izzo on Twitter, and he doesn't do Twitter, but there was a clip of him. And listening to Tom Izzo stand up for Michigan State, I just can't tell you what it meant to me to hear him take a stand when it really does. It certainly doesn't behoove him personally. Right. You know, it certainly puts him in the crosshairs. And yet to hear Tom Izzo stand up for his school, I wish there were more coaches like him out there, Jack, that would do that, that, you know, that would weigh in on some of the insanity and the hypocrisy that we see. You know, it's funny. I do Outkick now with Dan Dockich on Mondays. And a couple of weeks ago, we were talking about the Big Ten, and he asked me if the Big Ten could ever come around and generate the sort of excitement that the SEC does. And I said, not until they stop catering to Michigan and Ohio State. It's just ridiculous. It's happened.
Well, his son played for both schools.
Yeah, and I wasn't even aware of that when I said that.
Yeah, he played for Michigan and Ohio State.
Yeah, it wouldn't have changed my opinion, and he himself plays in Indiana. But the fact of the matter is, the Big Ten caters to Michigan and Ohio State, and it has to stop. It's not good for the rest of the league. That mentality destroyed the Big 12 with Oklahoma and Texas, and it's not fair. And thank God that there's someone like Tom Izzo out there, strong enough, notable enough to weigh in on it. I don't hear anybody else. I'll tell you this: the guy that Wisconsin just hired, he's not going to put up with it. That's the best hire of the offseason was Luke Fickell at Wisconsin.
Yeah, we're going to talk in just a minute with Matt LePay, the voice of Badger football and basketball, about exactly that. But you mentioned Dan Dockich, and he's not doing games now for ESPN. I understand, but I'm sure you saw his rant about Michigan State recently. I know a lot of people here have, and Tom Izzo's well aware of it, where he called Michigan State a hellhole, and it's the absolute worst place in the country, and there isn't a second. And nothing ever has come out of Michigan State that's any good. I think we should remind him that Mike Griffith came out of Michigan State.
I was going to say maybe God has a sense of humor here now that I'm his Monday. And I bring Tom Izzo up a lot on that show. And I do it.
He's fine with Tom Izzo. He's just not fine with anything else about Michigan State. And you might want to remind him that you represent that hellhole sometimes as an alum.
Well, that's – I'll tell you what, you know – being a former Michigan State guy, I made a reference to it last night at a public appearance when we were talking about, U of M and Jim Harbaugh. And, you know, it's really – I try really hard to be objective when I analyze these teams. There were some things that happened at Texas A&M this year, for example, that left a really, really bad taste in my mouth. I don't know if you saw the Twitter, the cannons going off while the two kids were praying in the end zone and – I just thought that was just one of the worst moments I'd ever seen. And the Jim Harbaugh hypocrisy is just an embarrassment. You know, there's so many things about Jim Harbaugh that I like and that I've enjoyed over the years. He is a little awkward. He's a little curious in some respects, but I believe he's very passionate. Certainly the way he loves his school, I think we admire that. I mean, he goes all out to be this character and represent, and there's something about that in college football that you love, but there's a level of hypocrisy here, Jack, that just can't be ignored. For him to be this venomous and aggressive towards Michigan State on a tunnel episode that, you know, is really going to change, you know, the face of post-game college football. I mean, there was always kind of an unwritten rule, whether it should have been or not, you know, that what happened in uniform happened in. It's kind of like hockey fights. You know, are we going to start seeing guys charged with crimes for fighting on the ice? I mean, and this was not on the field of play. And I'm not saying it was acceptable or anything like that. But you know, and it went to extremes. But because of how vociferous he was, and because of the nature of the prosecution and the area that it occurred. It's got a really bad look to it, Jack. It's got a really, really bad look from the outside in, and I think Michigan's got to look. I think the Big Ten really has to look closely at this.
Won't happen. Thanks so much, Mike. Really appreciate your time. Enjoy yourself. I think LSU is overrated, and I look forward to seeing Georgia up against whichever team shows up for.
But they got Brian. I think Brian Kelly's a whale of a coach.
I know you love Brian Kelly.
I love Brian
I'm telling
Kelly.
LSU got what it deserved at Texas A&M. Lost that opening game to Florida State and was clubbed at home by Tennessee.
So why don't you like Brian Kelly? Is there a story?
We can go into that some. I don't dislike Brian Kelly. I just think that this LSU team, and I've gone around and round with LSU fans because I voted LSU lower in AP poll than most people have. I just see this as a flawed team, and it's a three-loss team, and somehow got lucky enough to represent the West, and it'll wish it hadn't after Georgia was done with it.
So who'd win between LSU and Purdue if we're going to talk about flawed teams and championship games?
Oh, LSU would win.
Okay. I wasn't sure.
Yeah. But I said back in September that the winner of the Purdue-Minnesota game would represent the West. And, you know, it's somebody had to survive. Somebody had to
be... Well, Luke Fickell's on the way. Luke Fickell is on the way for the Big Ten West. That's my part of the message. And bring that up to your next guest.
Thank you, Mike. Appreciate it.
All right, Jack. Have a good one.